From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Richmond in East Bay.
Tara Hill Spinall.
Dolores at Market Street.
Daly City.
Outer Sunset.
Castro and Church.
Edge of the Mission.
Yorktown, Antioch.
Nopa, San Francisco.
Coming up, sport is a big deal in Oakland, which hosts the Warriors, the A's, and the Raiders. But with its trio of teams considering leaving, the town is reeling.
Would it be a crippling blow? I don't know. Having three teams like that and with the support that they've been given over the years, it sort of does something for the heart of the city and the soul of the city.
And we'll continue with our series on the sharing economy with a look at a bike shop that trades in sweat equity.
Well, this used to be a 10-speed. Now I'm turning it into a single speed so I can bike my butt back and forth to work.
Also, we'll check in with the exploration to Mars.
Touchdown confirmed. We're safe on Mars.
That's all coming up today on Cross Currents. What's the size of a car but travels 13,000 miles an hour? That would be the Curiosity Mars rover, which touched down on the red planet last night after 8 months of travel and what NASA engineers called 7 minutes of terror. We don't yet know what the red planet sounds like, but we do know what it sounded like at NASA when the craft landed safely.
Touchdown confirmed. We're safe on Mars.
The landing was a technological triumph for the U.S. space program. Curiosity will spend the next 2 years looking for signs of life on the red planet. And it could also bring new life to the U.S. space program. The project was managed by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory at the California Institute of Technology, which faces significant budget cuts to its operations and Mars missions. Local journalist Mary Roach is the author of Packing for Mars. It's a book about what it would take to prepare people to travel to Mars and the future of space exploration. She spoke with KALW's Casey Miner about what happens now that Curiosity has landed.
What is it about this you think that really grabs people?
First of all, it's this incredibly complex piece of equipment that is being sent 200 some million miles away and set down on the surface of Mars remotely, and it landed right where they wanted it to, and everything went right. And just this unbelievable human achievement. Thousands of people working for the better part of a decade to do that. And then it all comes together in this very brief chunk of minutes. And it's so gripping and compelling. Like a friend of mine said last night, we had the Olympics in one room and we had the Curiosity landing going on in the next room. And he said, these are the two things our country does really well. And it's that feeling.
So that raises something that I think is going to be a question on people's minds as we start to get data back from the rover, which is, you know, as you say, this took the effort of thousands of people over several years. It cost $2.5 billion, which is more than it was originally intended to cost. And that's all taking place against a backdrop of a pretty grim economic situation in this country and, you know, massive cuts to basic services, to education. Is this something that is worth it, and why?
Inspiring young people to go into engineering and to be excited about exploration, I think that's a critical part of education. And, you know, we don't have a lot of people going into engineering in this country. People aren't excited by it anymore. And something like the Mars landing and the work, and, you know, the work that's coming out of it, people are, the idea of life on another planet is pretty interesting and inspiring for young people. And so I think there's ways to look at the money spent and see it as a valuable investment.
What do you think people should be excited about or should be paying attention to as information starts to come out of this mission?
Well, inevitably, people will be looking toward answers to, was there ever life on Mars? Could there possibly be life now? The shots that come from these rovers, I don't know if many listeners have been on the NASA website, but there are these amazing panoramas of just these landscapes on Mars. It's just, you could see the rocks, you could picture yourself sitting there. What would that be like? I find it fascinating. I know not everyone does. I sent one of these pictures to my agent at one point. He goes, yeah, looks like the outskirts of Las Vegas. You know, it's not everybody's cup of tea, but to me, it's amazing stuff. And that is being uploaded all the time to the NASA website. You can subscribe to get downloads and feed from that. And I would encourage everyone to do that and follow the news and just stay on it, because it's really cool stuff.
Why should we care about Mars? Why should this matter?
This is all about getting answers to, you know, why is our universe the way it is? What happened all those many, many years ago? How did the universe form? I mean, so it's about answering those questions. This current landing, the place that they've gone down enables them to see this. There's this, it's a lake bed with a there's sort of a mountain in the middle of it, that so they can sort of look down that whole length of this mountain and see these millennia and what might have happened, and kind of be able to read the past on Mars and metaphorically read our own past. So I think it's you know, that's always important. But I also think that it's, why should we care? Because I think when you stop caring, when you go, oh, well, who cares about space? Who cares about what else is out there? Let's just turn on the TV and watch some. I don't know, watch some of celebrities. I think that's really depressing. This, I think it's important to keep alive the spirit of curiosity and the passion for exploration.
That's local journalist Mary Roach, author of Packing for Mars. She spoke with KALW's Casey Miner. You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. San Francisco and Oakland share a bay and a bridge. They also share a civic rivalry. That came to a head earlier this year when the Golden State Warriors announced they were planning to leave Oakland's Oracle Arena in 2017 for a yet-to-be-built waterfront park on San Francisco's Embarcadero. That news made former mayor and current lieutenant governor Gavin Newsom pretty pleased.
As an ex-mayor, I love to quote other ex-mayors, and I think the most quotable is Pericles, who said to the Athenians, "We do not imitate, for we are a model to others." That's San Francisco, and that's this project. This is about as good as it gets.
On the other hand, in another era, Gertrude Stein once famously said of Oakland, "There's no there there." And soon, there may be no professional sports teams there either. The A's would probably belong to San Jose by now if the San Francisco Giants didn't hold territorial rights over the South Bay, territory that was ironically granted to them in 1990 by the, wait for it, the Oakland A's. That move would leave the Raiders as the last team standing, at least until someone offers them a field that isn't a concrete island lined with barbed wire fences. And they've already left for L.A. once before. So for how long will Oakland remain a professional sports town? KALW's Holly J. McDeed reports.
It was a cloudless blue day. The bay shimmered beneath San Francisco's Pier 30. Loudspeakers belted Train Soul Sister. A fire department boat shot off water cannons. Mayor Ed Lee smiled as though his daughter were coming home for Christmas, which would be true if his daughter were the Golden State Warriors basketball team.
And it's been 41 years since the Warriors played here in San Francisco, and in my humble opinion, it's time to welcome them home.
For San Francisco residents, it's a win, win, and win. Unless they're trying to get anywhere on the Embarcadero on game day. The proposed arena's $400 to $500 million price tag will be privately financed. The city will have a new venue for concerts and conventions, and the whole shebang will create thousands of jobs and pump hundreds of millions of dollars into the city's economy, at least according to Warriors co-owner Peter Guber.
So we have one mission today, a world-class venue, a beacon for the Warriors, and a lightning rod to attract the best and the brightest performing talent and cultural talent that this city deserves. It's a mission where everybody wins.
Everybody? Well, the sun was shining over in Oakland, too, but there it cast shadows. Warriors fans watching from across the bay felt the trade. The Warriors currently play in a complex south of downtown Oakland, at Oracle Arena, which shares a parking lot with the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum. It's a really, really big parking lot. The fans of three sports teams currently share it. There, I meet a fan, Brandon Wood, who is tailgating an hour before an A's game.
They'll probably lose a lot of East Bay Warrior fans, but I think they'll actually gain more fans going into the city, unfortunately.
Wood, who's sporting the A's green and yellow t-shirt, squirts ketchup onto his hot dog. He likes to eat before going into the stadium. Beers there cost $8. And if he wants a post-game drink, it's an hour-long walk to the nearest bar. Inconvenient, but...
I love this stadium. It's great. I don't care that it's old. I think it's great. It's classic.
He's right. It's old. San Francisco sports columnist Scott Osler says the complex fits a dated model before stadiums were built in city centers.
So nobody thought about, wow, let's put a restaurant up right next to the Coliseum. And the way they're built, they're just built with giant parking lots around them. So that was not the mindset when they were built.
The Coliseum was built for the Raiders in 1966. The A's came from Kansas City in 68, the Warriors in 71, and they were winners.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Oakland Coliseum for the fourth game of the 1972 World Series.
The A's won three championships in a row from 1972 to 1974. And the Warriors? They beat the Washington Bullets in 1975. Then the Raiders, in their 1976-77 campaign, rained terror over the Minnesota Vikings to become Super Bowl champions, as captured here by NFL Films.
Nothing on earth that blocked or tackled or passed or ran could have stopped the Raiders on Black Sunday.
It was a triumphant era of sports in Oakland, set to triumphant music.
And it was a real, I don't know what you call it, synergy or whatever going on.
Again, columnist Scott Osler.
You had great teams, exciting teams, interesting teams, fun teams, owners who cared, fans who were passionate and cared. And I guess maybe what's changed in that picture is, I guess if you look at it, it's mostly the ownership, because I don't think the fans have gotten less passionate.
He says soon after, it stopped being about fun and games so much as about making a profit. In the past 25 years, TV revenue for the NFL jumped 700%. Teams that were selling for $70 million in the mid-1980s are now worth $1 billion.
They used to be more, each team would be more of a mom-and-pop type thing, typically owned by a businessman and everything. Now they're owned by corporations. They're worth a ton more, there's so much more advertising money. And so now it's not just a local fun thing. Now it's a big, big business.
The Oakland A's recently hosted the New York Yankees at the Coliseum. The A's surprisingly swept the series on the field, quite an upset considering the Yankees' payroll nearly quadrupled their host. You can trace the inequity to a lack of a lucrative TV contract and a dearth of people at the park. The A's have the third lowest attendance in Major League Baseball, drawing about 21,000 fans a game. It's simple math. Low attendance means less money to spend on players. On a similar note, the city of Oakland had to let dozens of municipal workers go in ongoing efforts to balance its budget. Now A's owner Lou Wolf wants to move the team to bigger and richer San Jose, away from diehard fans like Brendan Wood.
I can't speak to the owner because, to be honest, I haven't really heard much about him. All I know is that he really wants them to move. So maybe he doesn't care about the fans so much. I think he cares maybe probably a little bit more about the money.
By he, Wood might as well say they, considering Warriors owners Peter Guber and Joe Lacob's flashy San Francisco press conference.
So we have to take and make this venue a state-of-the-art technology, state-of-the-art, but it's got to serve state-of-the-heart, state-of-the-heart.
That showed columnist Scott Osler, basically they want nothing to do with Oakland.
Oakland to them is podunk, it's nowhere, they don't want to be there.
Oakland Mayor Jean Kwan has said she wants to keep her city's sports teams. She touts a new Coliseum City as the answer. It would include a new ballpark for the A's, a new stadium for the Raiders, a new arena for the Warriors, a convention center, a hotel, and a retail strip. The Oakland City Council voted unanimously in March to spend $3.5 million to come up with a development plan, something Kwan calls a game changer. Osler calls it a pipe dream.
Mayor Kwan's plan, it just seems almost childlike. It seems like on a scale of 1 to 1,000, that's the first little spot. It's almost like Mayor Kwan and her people sat around a lunch and said, hey, let's build a new ballpark and put some restaurants and stuff around it. Oh, yeah, that'd be cool. Let's tell them we'll do that.
The Warriors' ownership says Mayor Kwan has never really given them any definitive proposals. So now they're drawing up plans to cross the bay. The A's are trying to find their way to San Jose. And the Raiders, well, they've left once already, haven't they? Mayor Kwan says she'll build Coliseum City whether or not the team stay, which Osler says is just plain silly.
It's not like they're Beverly Hills, and so I don't know where they're going to come up with all this money all of a sudden, build this gigantic, wonderful complex with no sports team to kind of anchor that complex. So to me, it sounds like BS, but I'm not a political expert.
Of course, saving sports is just part of Mayor Kwan's job, and she has been busy trying to reform her police department and rebuild downtown in a time of budget cuts. Facts not lost on fan Brandon Wood.
I think politicians have a lot of other stuff to focus on right now than their sports teams.
And on the bright side, if the Golden State Warriors do skip town, they will still be required to pay the city $7.6 million every year until 2026 for construction bonds on Oracle Arena. But then, as Osler says, that money wouldn't necessarily buy happiness in Oakland.
I think having three teams like that and with the support that they've been given over the years, it sort of does something for the heart of the city and the soul of the city. And it means something to the people in the city. It gives them a little pride. And I think it does a lot for the city, and I would hate to see them lose that.
Abandoned sports stadiums mostly stay abandoned. Houston has spent millions keeping the empty Astrodome open after the Astros and Oilers left them. No one knows what to do with the Pyramid in Memphis, where the NBA's Grizzlies used to play. Make it an aquarium? A casino? Looking further back, the Roman Colosseum was transformed into a tourist attraction. If the Warriors, A's, and Raiders do end up leaving, maybe the city's abandoned stadiums could stand as iconic symbols of victory before winning became too expensive for the city of Oakland. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly J. McDeed.
We requested an interview with Mayor Jean Kwan's office and with her assistant city administrator, Fred Blackwell, who's overseeing Oakland's Coliseum City project. They declined or didn't respond. We'll let you know if and when they do. Meanwhile, we'd like to hear your thoughts about Oakland's Raiders, A's, and Warriors. Should they stay or should they go? You can call our tip line at 415-264-7106. That number again to leave us a message is 415-264-7106, and we'll try to get you on the air. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. We'll turn now from the business of sports to our series on the sharing economy.
It's always more fun to share with everyone.
Bike culture in the Bay Area runs the gamut from high-performance racers to donked-out scrapers to hipster fixies. For those who can afford it, keeping a nice bike can be an expensive hobby. And, as with cars, some people use their bikes as an extension of their personal style. But at Colectivelo, a community bike shop in East Oakland, bicycles are still seen for their primary purpose, transportation. The shop provides free space and tools, bike repair training in Spanish and English, and access to bicycles for those with low incomes. KLW's Jen Chien has more.
Ahorita estoy reparándole los cambios, ajustándolos.
Juana Paredes is adjusting the gears on a kid-sized bike mounted on a stand. Her hands are streaked with black grease, and her head tilts to the side as she stands back to watch the wheel turn, testing the new adjustment. Paredes is fixing her bike at Colectivelo, a bilingual community bike shop in Oakland's Fruitvale neighborhood. Bikes of every shape and persuasion line the walls and ceiling of the semi-open space. Heavy metal shelving holds bike tools and plastic bins of spare parts. There's a friendly, organized junkyard vibe to the place. 5 years ago, a public health nurse and her social worker colleagues saw a need for affordable, efficient transportation among the day laborers they served in East Oakland. They dreamed of creating a bike shop for them and the other low-income residents of the neighborhood. So they started asking around about a space for the shop, and they found one, at the Oakland Catholic Worker House of Hospitality. It's a resource center that mainly serves the large Latin American community in Fruitvale. Part of that work is providing transitional housing for recent immigrants. It's where Juana Paredes lived when she moved to the U.S. from Mexico, and that's how she found out about Colectivalo. I was here for about 5 Saturdays, she says, to help clean and open and close the shop. That's how she worked towards getting her first bike. Her work exchange experience is not an exception here. It's the norm. The shop offers the use of its bike repair tools, equipment, and space free of charge. But in order to take bikes or parts home, people are asked to volunteer their time and skills to benefit the shop.
I'll do my best. I don't know a lot about bikes, but I'll do my best.
Kathleen Mills is also here today doing work exchange for a neat little folding bike she's fixing up for her granddaughter. She found Colectivalo through the hot meal program at the Catholic Worker House.
And the way I heard about the place, one day I was actually hungry and have nothing to eat. So I'm like, let me go out and try to find somewhere. So they gave me some beans and rice, and then I was talking to them, asking them, did they have like job research and stuff like that. But then they were like, no, we fix bikes. I'm like, oh, great. So I came around and I started working on it.
She's been coming to the shop for 5 weeks. And now she's brought her nephew, Stephen Hobdy, into the fold.
This is my second day working on his bike. I'm turning it into a, what's this, a 10-speed, right?
It was.
Well, this used to be a 10-speed. Now I'm turning it into a single speed. Yeah. So I can bike my butt back and forth to work. I wanted to make something that would be more comfortable and make me look good on the street, too.
Mills says she discovered her interest for bicycles here at Colectivalo.
Because I never knew about bikes. I'm like almost 60 years old. So, and it's never too old to learn something. It's like the atmosphere is peaceful. We know we learn. It's a learning process and helping one another. And it's just, the aura is really great.
Se pasan momentos agradables en este lugar. Es como estar en su casa.
Juana Paredes has been here every Saturday for the past year. She says it feels like home.
En las calles es donde no me siento segura.
On the streets, I don't feel safe, Paredes says, because of all the violence, drug use, and muggings. Less than an hour before I arrived on this Saturday afternoon, a shooting occurred at the car wash next door to the shop. A serious reminder that safe spaces are a real need in this neighborhood. Colectivalo's main organizer, Morgan Cannonan, says the shared activity of bike repair helps build relationships in the neighborhood that otherwise wouldn't exist.
It creates a space where people, I think, feel like they belong.
This afternoon in the shop, native Spanish and English speakers are working easily side by side, and Cannonan says this bilingual element makes Colectivalo special.
We achieve this kind of diversity in the shop that sometimes I sit back and I'm like, this is like working in a way that I don't know if it happens many other places, you know, where folks who don't speak English super well are totally comfortable being here. Like, they have been coming for years, you know, and folks who don't speak Spanish, such as Stephen and Kathleen, like, they also are here and they're super friendly to each other. And it, you know, everybody adds to the ambiance, even if they can't necessarily communicate directly with, you know, words.
One of the reasons that Colectivalo can afford to operate in this communal way is that, unlike other retail bike shops, they have very low expenses. The Oakland Catholic Worker owns its house and charges no rent to the bike shop. Almost every item in the shop was donated or made by volunteers. Cannonan says that they occasionally receive cash donations, and sometimes people offer money instead of labor for bikes or parts. But, she says, that's not the point.
Because there's all these sliding scales options, and I love that people do that too, especially when, you know, if you need that money coming in. For, I think, folks with privilege, that feels like an option. But I think for a lot of folks who grow up without a lot of money, to ask to be that exception comes with some sense of alienation or shame that just does not need to be involved in this bike shop. I think it would only hurt the growth of community here, you know, and the real sharing and learning from each other.
It's near closing time. As Kathleen Mills starts cleaning and putting away the tools, her nephew, Stephen Hobdy, puts the finishing touches on his 10-speed to single-speed conversion.
And now I'm getting ready to get my brakes done, started getting them ready to go.
This type of conversion has been pretty trendy among bicycle hipsters. And though Hobdy admits he does want to look good on his bike, he says he's mostly concerned with the simple task of getting to work and back.
Because I have to bike from up here to Emeryville every day, so I just want to be more comfortable riding my bike.
At Colectivolo, people are getting back to bicycle basics, human-powered transportation. And they're doing it through the very human power of relationships.
Yeah, try that. But
it's not on both sides.
Well, maybe we could just get it with the one and then lever it. Yeah.
Hey.
In East Oakland, I'm Jen Chien for Cross Currents.
You can find more stories about the sharing economy at our digital news magazine. That's KALW.org. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KLW News. The team includes Buffy Almendares, Zoe Bresny, Julie Kane, Lupe Hernandez, RTM's Kunahoffs, Angela Johnston, Holly J. McDeed, Erica Moo, Seth Samuel, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor, Martina Castro is our managing editor, and Ben Trefney is our executive editor. What's that you're hearing? It's the harp playing of Emilia Romano. She's one of three young harpists performing at the Festival of Harps, The Next Generation, taking place this Wednesday at the Mission Cultural Center for Latino Arts in San Francisco. Music starts about 7 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.